Historically Black colleges and universities, known as HBCUs, are in a period of resurgence. They have more status, thanks to high-profile business partnerships and celebrity endorsements. They have more money, thanks to recent increases in federal support and philanthropic giving. And for many Black students who could have gone to prominent, mostly white schools, HBCUs have become the first choice. Since 2010, overall college enrollment has been on a steady decline. And during the pandemic, it plummeted 9.6%, according to the Education Data Initiative, which uses federal figures to track the numbers. But since the pandemic, HBCUs are seeing a surge that predominantly white institutions are not. FAMU President Larry Robinson called it remarkable in his February 2023 State of the University speech.
18,000 plus first-time and college students have applied to Florida A&M University. To put that in perspective, that is 10,000 more than who applied just a year ago at this same time. 10,000.
At FAMU, the country's top-rated public HBCU, the moment is a double-edged sword.
Stress, confusion, anger from parents of incoming FAMU students as the university says it's run out of on-campus housing.
Just before making the trip to North Carolina, Rattlers head coach Willie Simmons says at least 20 players were ruled ineligible to play.
20 players on FAMU's football team deemed
ineligible due to either academic reasons or to transfer rules.
$12 billion. $12 billion. According to the Department of Education, that is the funding shortfall between historically Black land-grant colleges and their predominantly white counterparts in 16 states. By law, they are supposed to be funded equitably. The gap is sparking protests, also sparking lawsuits.
This is a time of renewed interest in HBCUs. But given that they've had bursts of growth in the past, some question whether this is just a trend, doomed to be short-lived. Reginald Ellis is FAMU's Assistant Dean of the School of Graduate Studies and Research and a professor of history.
This up to the HBCUs themselves, and that's where the leadership comes into play. And so one of the things that I have asked myself, is this a moment or a movement?
Grew up in a small town, used to stay off Wanish Way. Worked in the mall, the food court at Chick-fil-A. Even called out my name as you handed me my tray. I looked you in your eyes and still had nothing.
I'm your host, Margie Menzel, and this is Not So Black and White, a podcast from WFSU Public Media.
Had a thing for this shawty, wish I knew her. But I only sit online on computer. I'm talking so bad, won't text her, I'm a cover. In a small town
in 2021, then 16-year-old Curtis Lawrence III announced he would bypass schools like Yale and Harvard to attend FAMU. That same year, top football recruit Travis Hunter reneged on his plan to play at Florida State University and announced he'd be heading to Jackson State. Both developments went viral. And people wondered why two such talented Black students would forego opportunities to attend elite, predominantly white programs to attend an historically Black university instead.
People like to call it a FAMU-ly. People, everyone knows everybody on campus. We're all taking care of each other, so it's definitely a home.
Lawrence, now 19, says FAMU reached out to him in a way no other school did. He met the president, the professors.
People in different offices, they made sure to let me know that when I was here that they would take care of me and that they would make sure that, despite me coming in relatively young, that I would be safe and everything, any issue that I have, that would be taken care of. And I wouldn't have to have any worries about living on my own.
And does he feel at home?
Yeah, I do.
Increasingly, Black students who could go to an Ivy League school are choosing HBCUs. But this isn't the first time it's happened, at least not at Florida A&M. The university was named Princeton Review's College of the Year in 1997, an honor that came, in part, by besting Harvard in recruiting National Achievement Scholars, the top Black students in the country, based on their SAT scores and high school grades. And yet, since the enrollment highs of the 2010s, overall enrollment at institutions of higher learning has declined. Florida A&M, like its predominantly white and HBCU counterparts, experienced the slump. But then came a series of racially charged incidents at other schools. Such as a 2015 scandal involving the University of Oklahoma chapter of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity. Its members were videotaped singing a song with racist slurs and references to lynching. When the video surfaced online, SAE's national headquarters shut the chapter down. FAMU's Ellis says the scandal caused a lot of soul-searching for Black students.
Black students, quite frankly, said, why would I continue to invest in universities? Because, you know, college and universities are a major investment for a family now. And so they're saying, these students of color are saying, why should I continue to invest in a university that really holistically is not embracing my presence on this campus? And what they started to see is or reimagine or reconsider is HBCUs.
The SAE scandal was far from the last. The 2016 racially charged election brought further enrollment growth. Then came 2020.
You can directly point to the death of George Floyd and the protests and the situations that happened on campuses that were not HBCUs, and students did not feel safe on those campuses. It is why the surge in, while college admissions were going down across the country, HBCUs were surging.
That's HBCU Game Day's Vaughn Wilson, a former FAMU administrator. 2020 was also the year Breonna Taylor was shot to death in her home during a botched police raid, and Ahmaud Arbery was murdered in what was held to be a hate crime while he was out for a jog. All three victims were Black. Curtis Lawrence, the young FAMU scholarship student, had been dual enrolled at George Washington University while in high school, but not involved socially on that predominantly white campus.
If you're at an HBCU, it's a very different environment. You're not going to experience the same kind of racial events that you would experience outside of an HBCU at a PWI or just generally in the world. And so as a Black man in a society that, you know, isn't, you know, a lot of Black people, an HBCU kind of offers that kind of safety of being away from that for at least for 4 years, and then preparing you to go into that to be ready for, you know, going into the rest of the world.
The growing wave of interest in HBCUs crested at Florida A&M that year, catching the school off guard and struggling to meet the moment. The fall 2022 semester brought a huge demand for on-campus housing and a huge shortage of it. FAMU had been planning for growth, tearing down older dorms to make room for new ones. But what administrators didn't plan for was that all the students the school had accepted would all show up, and that due to rising rental costs, they'd all want to live on campus. Here's HBCU Game Day's Wilson.
Now, normally when you have that situation, there's a formula of a percentage of people who will actually come. This year, that number far exceeded the formula that every college in the United States of America uses. Those numbers of people who applied and got accepted, who actually came, far exceeded the formula. So FAMU got caught off guard with the housing.
Other HBCUs had similar problems at roughly the same time. But before FAMU's housing uproar died down, some 20 members of the Rattlers' lauded football team missed a major season opener due to eligibility problems. It turned out the university's 300 student athletes had just one compliance officer, prompting the team to write FAMU President Robinson a lengthy letter that he later praised. The school quickly fixed the compliance issues, but not before being heavily criticized in the media. Here's Robinson taking questions from reporters after meeting with the team.
In fact, we have we're in the throes of a search process that will result in at least two people in the next 30 to 45 days on the campus. But overall, we've committed to a total of five additional people to help with compliance in athletics.
During the past two decades, FAMU has been up and down a lot. It's cycled through presidents and bad financial audits, landed on accreditation probation due to a hazing scandal, and faced perennial problems in disbursing financial aid. FAMU's Ellis says some, but certainly not all, of the disorder owes to historical funding disparities that go back decades, and the widespread ramifications of those decisions.
So we know the back end, right? The back end, you know, we don't have perhaps enough financial aid representatives. We don't have enough academic coordinators. We don't have enough administrative staff in each office. Perhaps our faculty is overburdened teaching four or five classes a semester and still have an expectation to do the research, but also do the community service aspect because we are a public land-grant university. When you start to look at that, how is the resources that are being allocated and the lack of that resource, how is that impacting the university?
There's no way to move forward unless we right the wrong of institutional racism in this country. And you can't run from it. You can't hope that it'll cure itself. You have to either be willing to enter the arena and join the fight or not.
Josh Dubin is a Miami-based civil rights attorney. He represents six Black FAMU students who are suing the Florida Department of Education for years of underfunding their school, amounting to a shortfall of roughly $1.3 billion. More recently, in a letter to the state, the U.S. Department of Education placed that figure at closer to $2 billion. The students' attorneys compare Florida A&M to the University of Florida, since they're the state's two public land-grant universities. The plaintiffs say the state has failed to meet all its funding obligations to FAMU. And in Tallahassee, home to FAMU and nearby predominantly white Florida State University, the differences are stark.
The buildings have been more updated at Florida State. They have more recently built facilities, much better resources that have been allowed to them throughout time.
Brittany Denton is a doctoral student at FAMU's College of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences. She's also one of the student plaintiffs.
Florida A&M University has not always been privy to those same privileges, and we just want to fight to be able to say that we deserve those too. And especially as the number one public HBCU in the nation, we definitely deserve more credit than we get.
The alumni of FAMU who were in the legislature when I was there, we came together, and every year we had to fight for whatever funding that we got.
Former State Senator Arthenia Joyner was among the last graduates of the original FAMU College of Law, which was shuttered by the Florida legislature in 1968. She took her final exams as the shelves were being stripped of law books, later given to FSU. The legislature reestablished FAMU's law school in the year 2000, but Joyner continued to fight for funding for the university throughout her 12 years as a legislator.
And it was always a battle. Never once could you just assume that you would get top dollar or come anywhere near what was adequate in order for the institution to function at the level that it should.
Arguments in the potential class action case involve such things as an engineering program that FAMU shares with Florida State and the FAMU Law School that was closed in 1968 and revived decades later at an Orlando campus. The closure of that original FAMU law school came as a law school opened at Florida State. Niobe Stevens is one of the six FAMU student plaintiffs in the potential class action lawsuit.
Its importance to me is not only for the present, but to look forward to the future and help those other students who will come to FAMU not look at FSU and say, wow, I wish that I could. They'll look at FAMU and appreciate not only what we have, but not have to compare and look less than.
Maryland and Alabama have settled lawsuits over historic underfunding by their respective state governments. In 2021, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan signed a bill that will provide $577 million to the states for HBCUs. In Alabama, in fiscal year 2005, more than $200 million went to HBCUs Alabama State University and Alabama A&M University when the federal lawsuit Knight v. James was settled. And the state of Tennessee recently concluded it may owe its public HBCU up to $544 million. A federal judge has refused to dismiss the lawsuit over FAMU's funding. For Brittany Danton,
we do deserve to be treated equally as those students that are literally across the tracks from us. It's not fair that we aren't able to get the same opportunities. We aren't allowed to get the same amount of money. We aren't allowed the same education in the same city as another school that has every opportunity in the world. Have you heard the preliminaries? Feelings, frivolous, the list goes on and on. So if you decide to roll with us, come on a trip with us, we'll make it marvelous, yeah. So come on down, or maybe come on up, 'cause we're known to fly so high. So buckle up and hold on tight.
As Florida's Republican leaders blast the philosophy of diversity, equity, and inclusion, higher education in Florida has grown ever more political and contentious. FAMU President Robinson has proven adept, so far, at navigating these waters. He notes that FAMU students have always been ready to put their institution at odds with state leaders. WFSU asked what he thinks of the potential class action lawsuit. Do you think it's fair? Are you going to do anything about it?
Well, the good thing is I won't have to, right? You know, and I will say this about our students. What are you talking about? The football players who wrote me a letter, or the people who marched in support of, you know, desegregation back in the 50s and the 60s. We have at FAMU some of the nation's most socially conscious and aware students on the planet, okay? And when there are things that they see that don't necessarily go the way that they think they should, then they should step up and say something, right? And so these young students and whomever else is involved, you know, see the reason to file the lawsuit, right? And so, and that's just the way it is, right? I am not a party to the lawsuit, but at the same time, you know, it's the vision or perspective of our students and those involved in the law school that think there is some merit to it. And so, you know.
Aren't you walking kind of a fine line since they're suing people that have some control over your institution?
Well, it's always a fine line. When you're in this position, you always have to walk a fine line, right? I mean, and that's the case historically. You know, maybe I would be speaking a little bit differently if I wasn't in this position, but I have to represent Florida A&M University. That's what the Board of Trustees hired me to do, and I'm going to do that to the best of my ability until they say, okay, as I told you earlier, it's time for that to be over. And so I think when it comes to the lawsuit, you know, these students and those, you know, particular plaintiffs have seen something that they think needs to be fixed. And so we'll see how that goes. Okay.
As to the university's own issues, Robinson knows there are unresolved problems. He's already had to answer to his trustees for the housing and athletic program issues. And he knows that the perception of HBCUs isn't universally positive, a fact he believes to be rooted in stereotypes. But that, he believes, is changing.
This notion that HBCUs were created to deal with students who otherwise couldn't be successful in a place else is one of the biggest fallacies in higher education, right? And so what I think, you know, the social justice movement helped to pull the curtain back on is it gave us a voice to tell the real story to those out there who would be willing to listen, including parents.
Robinson came to FAMU in 1995 as a visiting professor. In 2010, he took a leave of absence to serve in the Obama administration. In 2012, he was tapped as provost, followed by several stints as interim president. He was named president in 2017 after the previous one was fired and has overseen a period of relative stability at FAMU. Robinson's higher education began at an HBCU. Since these institutions were created in the wake of the Civil War, they have been widely credited with creating and expanding Black professionalism and generating Black wealth.
But we have known, those of us who have been in the HBCU community, this has been our secret, right? Not that we try to keep it from people, but we have known this, right? And I personally know it because I had the privilege of attending, you know, an HBCU my freshman year in Memphis, Lemoore Norton College, and transferring to the PWI across town and seeing a drastic difference in how I was accepted as an African-American male trying to major in chemistry.
As a student, Robinson earned his bachelor's degree in chemistry summa cum laude from Memphis State University and his doctorate in nuclear chemistry from Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri.
You know, that world that I grew up in, I will never forget my first time going to a predominantly white institution back in the 60s as part of the All West Tennessee Band and seeing what separate but equal really looked like, right?
FAMU's applications have soared. The school has received more than 20,000 requests for admittance in the fall. Robinson points proudly to the 3.98 GPA of the newly admitted class, but he acknowledges feeling a bit conflicted about that.
So Larry Robinson, back in the day, wouldn't be coming to FAMU. I'm really worried about what that means, because I worry about every student who comes and every student who doesn't get in, because that could be another person to help us as a nation, as a society, get to where we need to go. And of course, that student's family and their community as well.
FAMU has become much more exclusive than ever before. So what happens when an institution built to expand opportunity, equity, and inclusion for people of color climbs beyond the reach of those for whom it was built? Reginald Ellis has spent his life on the campus of Florida A&M University since he was a small child.
The question I raise is this a moment or a movement? Is it's going to be a movement for the universities that are prepared for it? It's going to be a moment for those who are not, because those students are, after a while, going to say, well, I tried it and it didn't work out for me.
The acceptance rate at FAMU is roughly 35%, compared to the University of Florida's 30% and Florida State University's 37%. In June, after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down affirmative action, the Brookings Institute wrote that the decision, quote, means that HBCU investment is more important than ever before. Brittany Denton sees the disadvantage clearly. She and her fellow plaintiffs are fighting to end it. But FAMU, where student activism is an honored tradition, will always be her first choice.
I really do hope and pray that I would be able to live up to that type of standard, because there are many people who have come from FAMU that they've made dramatic changes in the world, in the state, in the United States. They've been able to just make a change by simply having something to say. I hope to follow in their footsteps and to lead my classmates and my peers and my colleagues in a very similar march that they did.
You've been listening to the podcast, Not So Black and White, A Community's Divided History, brought to you by WFSU Public Media. I'm Margie Menzel. Thank you.